Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, photographer Karel Augustus discusses his new photography book, Black Hollywood, Reimagining Iconic Movie Moments, with journalist Ariane Nettles. This episode is presented in conjunction with our new special exhibit, Dark Testament, A Century of Black Writers on Justice, now open. This conversation originally took place October 13th, 2022, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum.
Thanks, everyone, for being here tonight. My name is Allison Sansoni. I'm the program director here at the American Writers Museum. The AWM's newest exhibit, Dark Testament, looks at the lives and works of Black writers from the 100 years between the end of the Civil War and the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. These legendary journalists, speechwriters, novelists, critics, and scholars gave voice to the unheard and relentlessly pushed a white society to recognize not just their equality, but their excellence. In Black Hollywood, photographer Karel Augustus imagines what the iconic moments in film history, Holly Golightly and her diamonds and pearls, Lloyd Dobler with his boombox held over his head, General Patton in front of the American flag, would look like if Black people could have seen themselves on film in all their talent and glory. It's a celebration of the joy that movies can create for all, and Karel is here to discuss it with journalist and educator Ariane Nettles. I'd like to welcome you both.
Thank you so much, Allison. And like Allison said, please, we have the really great luxury of having this amazing author here with us today. So I'm really excited to be able to share all of your burning questions after our chat. So Karel, you know, we chatted a little bit and I told you how excited I was to add this beautiful book to my coffee table so that when people come over, they can be extremely jealous and ask me where they can get it. And then I can show them how they can go buy it. I've actually had at least one friend so far say, oh, y'all, look at what I bought. And I was like, yeah, that's great. I already had it. So can we talk just a little bit? I would just love to start by asking you, what does Black Hollywood mean to you? What is your definition of that?
What's my definition? So thank you, everybody, for coming out. I'm very excited to see all familiar faces that I love. So what Black Hollywood means to me is talent and opportunity and just the strive to try to get those things in front of people to be seen. I have some really popular names in this book, but so many of them told me that nobody ever pulled them to the side to do an independent creative shoot. They're usually in a space where, you know, they're in an ensemble cast and you have to cut it out and now they're on a poster. So it's continuing to be a problem, even though they're talented, well-known people. So that's what it means to me. It's just talent that's overlooked.
And as soon as you open up this book, this quote really kind of like sticks with you. This is not just a book for Black people. It's a book for all people about Black people, which we know is really important because a lot of times we're always talking about how Black history and how Black culture is American culture, how it is. So what was kind of your thinking behind really making sure, like, if when you open this book, that's the first thing that you are going to see?
Yeah. So I didn't want to alienate anybody from this book. You know, I walk into spaces every day of my life where I don't have control over. And oftentimes I'm on set and I'm the only Black person on set. So I don't have a choice. If I'm uncomfortable, then I have to deal with it or I don't work. So I wanted to create, I didn't want to alienate anybody with this book because I think people see the title and then they think, oh, that's not for me. No, it is for you. You know, it's for your children. If you, even if you're not Black, it's for your children. It's for your grandchildren. It's for people to sort of experience and know that this is a safe world that you can experience the way I experienced the world as well. So it was just to make sure that we don't alienate people. And then, you know, it's going to, I've already started to get the questions about, you know, well, what if? So it was sort of to get in front of all of that stuff that I know is coming and that I have gotten. So
Yeah. Because especially, I mean, I think that is kind of interesting now that we've had like discussions around like the Black Ariel for the Little Mermaid and recasting black people in roles that were played and sometimes not even necessarily by a white person, sometimes literally like by an imaginary situation, a fish, you know? Mad that Black people can be a fish or an imaginary creature that doesn't exist. And so these are real people.
Right. Well, they're figments of somebody's imagination as well, because they are fictional characters. I think maybe 3 or 4 pictures are based on a real person. Mm-hmm. But that's just because my whole life I had to look at that image.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a great image. But I watched my mom braid my aunt's hair and put beads on it, and I thought they were beautiful women with cinnamon color skin and, you know, thick, kinky hair, but they did it up and it was beautiful. But it stopped when I left my front door, because the imagery was the polar opposite.
Yeah.
So that's what this is about.
Yeah, because even, you know, like Audrey Hepburn, like we may not necessarily were idolizing like her as a person, we were idolizing her as this star, as this of character of like glamour and fantasy.
Right.
Not necessarily like her in her personal life or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't know anything about her personally at all. I just know that for whatever reason, that image has been in my head since I can remember. And I always thought, you know, as an artist, you sort of want to create work that, you know, reach people. So I always thought, oh, what if that was a Black girl? Mm-hmm. Or what if the image of Patton was a Black girl? Or, you know, Black women should be in these spaces. And it's changing now. But from the time I started this book and, you know, times before that, it was few and far between. And now, because it's changing, it's causing problems, as you mentioned about The Little Mermaid.
But as you mentioned, I really love, I'm kind of drawn to how you said, like, you know, you were thinking about like your mother and like women in your family. And it makes me think about Andre Leon Talley and him being like literally one of the biggest fashion icons in the world. And when you ask him about what was beauty and luxury, he said, my grandmother, you know, and how she would press her suit for church and how everything was so well put together. And so, you know, your ability to like, how did you kind of bring that into your ideas for this book? Like all of the beauty that you have seen.
Yeah. So a lot of this, you know, I always talk about the Mama Dearest shot, because in that actual scene, Faye Dunaway has on noxzema or something on her face. And during the time when we were shooting, Kelly, the actress, said, hey, do you want me to put noxzema on? I said, no, because I want to show your beauty. I don't want to cover up, you know, we're being inspired by these shots. I don't want to cover up what I consider to be one of the most beautiful faces I've ever seen. So let's not do that. People will get it. People's brains will fit in the shot, or you won't miss it because the shot is so good. You know, I'll take that. But it was just, it's just always important to me to show, you know, how I felt about Linda Carter, to show that to the world in the form of a Black woman. Because I thought that was the essence of women. I thought it was the essence of beauty. I thought it was the essence of, if that was not the standard, then everything else fell beyond that. So that's what I tried to do with the beauty aspect of this. Because everybody wants to make up and look pretty.
Yeah.
So I that's a part of this as well.
Yeah, I can't pretend like that wasn't some of my favorite parts. Like I was just like, oh, it's so glamorous. Like,
yeah, well, we should shoot.
I mean, you don't have to ask me twice. Like, I would be ready, okay? I would be ready. I'll be there.
There you go.
4 hours
you got
before
hair,
you're
makeup.
There.
Don't even worry about it.
Right. I'll be like, I'll figure it out. So, one thing that is like really, really amazing and also like very inspiring about this book is how you know, you started shooting, you did your first shoot in February 2010, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is the definition of a labor of love and something that you continue to work at and stay dedicated to. Yeah. So what was like that, what was that actual process like? Because I'm sure that we have people, whether they're watching virtually or here today, that are tackling some really ambitious projects that they are going to need to break off piece by piece and could be a very long thing, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you have to do is commit yourself to it, no matter how much time it's going to take, no matter, you know, the path, the obstacles, because they are surely going to arise. I don't think you can have success without having, like, you know, obstacles arise. So I don't want to, I don't quit things. If I start something, I finish it. I don't care what it is. If I start it, I have, it's just something that's in me that has to see it to the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, when I went to college, I said, hey, I guess I'm going to have a degree because now that I got this loan, I got to finish. Or when I joined the Army, which was a little rough in areas, I'm like, I guess I'll get out with an honorable discharge. When I started the Camino, I did the Camino. I'm like, when I take the first step, I guess I'll be at the end with a certificate. So I don't do things unless my goal is to finish it. Okay. One of my favorite adages ever is, you have to start with the end in mind. Mm. So if you walk into any situation starting with what you want the end to look like, it's usually just a pretty easy course. Not easy, but At least you always know that you're working towards a goal, even when people around you don't. Because people are like, well, what's up with the book? Where's the book? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, listen, I wake up every single day thinking about this book. And I'm the only person I know that's been on every single shoot, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want to see it in book form as well. And sometimes it gets a little frustrating when people don't get that aspect of it. But I knew what my goals and my intentions were. And I knew if I just steadfast and prayed. And, you know, just stuck to it that, you know, even if I ended up printing this at Costco and drove around in my car, it was going to be a book.
It was going to happen.
It was going to happen. You know, luckily I didn't have to do that, but I had just committed myself to seeing it all the way through.
Yeah. And thinking about, like, when you first imagined this, like, into now, right, to what it feels like, what it looks like.
First off, this is beautiful. Yeah. The book, like, it's just, I'm sorry, it's just a beautiful book. I mean, it is.
It is beautiful.
You know, when I first got my book, I felt like somebody handed it to me and said, you should be inspired by this. Because I was like, wait, who did this? Because, you know, the person I was has vacillated for the last 11 plus years. So I get it. I'm like, you know, first I cried for like 20 minutes and then I'm like, okay, let me make sure everything's correct. But it's the beauty about, I spoke with Aldous Hodge, who's in here, who's actually in Black Adam that's coming out. He is a watchmaker and people don't know that. He makes these really intricate watches with tiny pieces and tiny hands. And he and I had a conversation about the time it took me to do this because I would see people in Hollywood and go like, oh my God, they're gonna ask me about this book that I shot 4 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever. He goes, no, the beauty is that you have a project that's spanned it across. He goes, I've been working on a watch for 8-9 years and everybody wants to know where it is. So it's when people get it, it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah. And I mean, the themes of the book are so good that, like, thank I you. Told you, I, when I'm flipping through, I forget that it's a reimagination. I'm looking and I'm like, wait, did I watch this movie? I didn't know they were in that. And so, like, because it's so good, it just draws you in. And so, like, how do you, like, see a person that you're going to work with and kind of imagine what that is? Because there's, you know, just as you talk to us, like, I'm sure that your knowledge and love for film and, you know, the screen is so wide and beautiful. Like, how do you figure out, like, what's going to be that one for the person? Because it really does match. And you can tell that the person feels as if it's for them by, like, their performance in it.
It's a performance. So I could have done this with people walking down the street. I guess I wanted a little bit of a challenge and be careful what you wish for because you might get it. But I wanted actors who could, like you said, do, it's not just beautiful people are around us all the time, but modeling is something completely different, you know? So I wanted people that could perform the shot out. I think only two people didn't like or didn't feel the shot that I had first presented to them, and that was Kel Mitchell, because I first asked him to do American Psycho. He goes, ah, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I'm walking in Christ.
Gotcha.
So I'm like, okay, I completely respect that. And then the way it worked out, Jay Ellis ultimately did it, and he just, it worked out better. And so, but everybody I spoke to individually about a shot just already had a previous connection with the character or the actor who played the character. And it just worked out like that.
Yeah.
Like most, like 98% of the time.
Yeah.
And nobody never not showed up. And they all saw what I was doing. It was just really like supportive and which is what I wanted.
The blood in that is very scary. Just to be clear, as somebody who is really scared to watch scary movies, for the American Psycho, the blood in feels like a little too real. I was like,
fake. It is fake.
I know it's fake, but I was like, this is so good, but this feels so real.
Yeah.
So you also mentioned that, you know, when you approach people and said, hey, I have this idea and I'm, you know, do you want to shoot with me about it? Then nobody asks you, why are you doing this, right? Because everybody knew why.
And that's telling in and of itself, because, you know, some people want me to put certain shots into context or explain the shot. And I'm like, I can do that, but who am I explaining it to? Because every single person that I asked to be in this book or to be photographed, nobody said, okay, why are we doing this? Not one person. Mm-hmm. So what does that say to you? That says that we all collectively recognize the imagery matters, and if I could participate in something that's going to bring that to the forefront in such a bold way, why not do it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the people that didn't get it, I guess, didn't get photographed. So,
yeah,
but nobody asked.
Yeah, and that reminds me. Somebody was telling me about like the idea of how, especially children, how you have to show them mirrors of themselves,
right,
but also like windows of opportunities and like doors to other people's lives. Right. And I was like, I feel like this book is such a good example of that, of how, you know, like even if you can't see yourself specifically within it, you can imagine it,
that's right,
or you can see someone else you love or
that's
someone
right
else you've seen on television.
That's right.
And so it becomes this kind of transformative piece of work where if they grow up and see people in these roles, it won't be a shock, right? Like for us, we're like, oh, a Black Audrey Hepburn is a big deal, right? You know, they'll say, oh, I've seen that, right? Like that's on my coffee table
right
in my parents' house,
right? Yeah. So my sister sent me a picture the other day of my nephew flipping through the book, and he goes, oh my God, this is a big deal. He's like 8. He's very, he's a wordsmith at 8. I don't know how, but I said, no, tell him he's a big deal. Because when I was 8, I watched Dukes of Hazzard with my cousin, you know, cheering for a car called the General Lee with a Confederate flag on the hood. And nobody cared about the implications that it had on me or going into the world. You know what I mean? Yeah. So maybe because it wasn't made for me, maybe I wasn't in the demographic, but I was affected by it. And then you go into the world just, you know, being on the outside looking in. So it's sort of a glimpse into, you know, seeing something different. It is changing.
Yeah.
It is changing, but this is new to when I was growing up and, you know, the backlash from The Little Mermaid.
Yes.
The Game of Thrones or whatever.
It's
just like,
it's
just people's comfortability.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, people have said to me, well, what are you trying to say? I'm like, well, if you have eyes, you can see what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
If the question is, how do you feel? I can't answer that because I'm not your therapist.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So if you see Audrey Hepburn being portrayed as a Black girl and it bothers you, then call your therapist and say, hey, I need 40 minutes today because I'm feeling a little anxious.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we don't have to have a conversation at all. We could just be entertained by it, like I've had to be my whole life.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
So that's my stance on it.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, I mean, I do think, especially as children, like I remember the books that my mother had, right, or the ones, not even just the ones she read, just the ones that were around the that's house. Right. Like, I just remember just walking around, reading the different names on the spines, mm-hmm, and saying, okay, all right. Oh, I like Zora Neale Hurston. Okay, I think she's my favorite author, right? You know, yeah, yeah, and yeah. I think that kids take in all
these
things, and we don't even know, yeah.
You don't. I just spoke in Texas the other night, and my cousin, who's 21, she said something, and she said, you know, growing up, she always felt so self-conscious because all the pretty girls were blonde and blue-eyed, and they got to have all the fun. And you know, I posed the question, like, what movie can you name? And maybe I don't know, but where a black girl is chosen as the prom queen? Do you know what I mean? And that affects kids growing up, you know. And it sends you into a world where you just expect less than all the time. Or you get to hang out in the median and not be in the middle, the center of it. So this is a note to all of that.
Yeah. So speaking of like family and your people, right? Mm-hmm. And I know you got some people here today.
Yeah, I do. I got some people
here.
You know,
you got lots of people here today.
I'm very excited.
So how has your tribe, your people, like kind of supported you through this very like not so easy process of publishing, right? I don't think I've never heard anybody say that they published a book and it was easy. I've never heard that come out of anybody's mouth. They've said like, "Oh, I had a great editor. Mm-hmm. I love my pub." Like they've nodded to people who supported them along the way, but nobody has said that this was just an easy process. So, so how has your tribe really been there for you?
Listen, I was ready day one when we signed the contract. I was ready because I had been preparing for this moment the whole time. I turned over every single picture that was complete, unless I did 3 or 4 shoots. I think once I signed, I did another 4 or 5 shoots for the book. And as far as the people that support me, they've been supporting me since they heard about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I had a YouTube channel where I would post all the behind the scenes videos because I never released any images from the book because I'm like, okay, one day when I produce a book, I don't want people to be like, we saw it already.
Right.
Like
right,
nobody, right. Not even the performers actually saw their picture until they had the book in their hand. Mm. So it was all calculated to take the world by storm and for people to like sort of be taken aback by it and sort of hopefully bring them in. Because across the room, you don't know that that's not Audrey Hepburn.
Right.
But the book is in your hand by then. Mm. You know? So yeah, but family and friends have always been just super supportive. And I understand how, you know, watching something sort of materialize over, you know, a decade, people can get tired, which is why I did the YouTube videos. And that's why I just started saying it's happening, y'all, because mm-hmm. people kept saying, what's going on? What's going on? I'm like, well, it's underway.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, then I came up with the wristbands and I would pass those out and get people like Oprah mm-hmm. and Mark Hamill and Martha Stewart and Denzel Washington to wear it. And post pictures. So I was trying to do all this stuff mm-hmm. until you got the book in your hand. So now I can stop doing all that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
How did you hold on to that like excitement? And by the way, your tribe was the first people here. Okay.
Yeah.
Like they were here, they were early. I was like, they gotta be family. Because family is gonna come.
That's
they're gonna
right.
make sure they represent
right.
like they close. So how did you hold in your excitement as you were waiting for like what feels like your moment? Because I think that, you know, whenever we are waiting in a way to be recognized for something, mm-hmm. I mean, and whether that recognition is, it doesn't necessarily have to be like an award or anything like that, right? But when, as creative people, you have like created something, you've massaged it, you've worked on it, and now in the inside, you're like, y'all just wait and see.
Yeah.
Like, wait and see. So yeah. how did you hold on to that in like the meantime, between time?
You know, so I have been seeing most of these images for years and years mm-hmm. and years and years. So to some extent, I was tired of them, but I knew that they were beautiful. And I would go back and look and be like, okay, I can't wait. Don't worry, you're gonna get your moment. I'm gonna get you in a book. So I just always held on to what my original goal was.
Yeah.
And I wanted, you know, so many people have said, oh, I saw this digitally, but even a lot of the actors got digital copies of the book where you click a button and just off, you flip it. But it's such a different experience when you physically get to hold the book.
Yeah.
So that's the experience I want. I love walking into bookstores and seeing it, and I can't stop snapping pictures. Right. I was just excited about what people would think if they got the opportunity to see it the way I wanted them to see it.
Yeah.
And a part of me knew that if I had the opportunity to show people how I wanted to present it to the world, that they would probably be really into it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I felt.
And, right. And, you're like, oh, no, they're going to like it.
Like, they might love it if they see it properly. Right. Yeah. Right. And I always thought that. I never second-guessed it. You know, this many African-American entertainers hasn't been pulled together for an independent project ever.
Yeah.
You know, so it's so much about it that deserves to be in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, you know, you've talked about failure, rejection, mm-hmm. disappointment, like those feelings that can happen, oof. Especially, you know, mm-hmm. because everybody is not going to see your vision.
That's right.
You know, so.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody's not going to see it, right? Like you see it, but everybody's not going to see it. So what is your advice for people who might be dealing with that when it comes to any type of creative project, whether it could be writing a book or anything related to mm-hmm. that, right? Like, it's not easy to do those types of things, but you know, you have something in your heart and you know.
And you know it.
You know it. You know it. Like you said, you were like, I'm going to print it. Well, I got to print it and pass it out myself. It's going to get printed. But how do you still deal with those harder things?
Yeah. So it's exactly what you said. If you know it, then you know it. And if you know something and you know that there's a place for it and a space for it, there's nothing that's going to stop you from doing it. I mean, I didn't shoot for like a year between COVID and just sort of feeling like, you know, reaching back out to publicists and going back and forth. And, you know, it gets to be taxing. But then I would just say, okay, you know what? I would look at the, you know, you shoot five people and you're like, oh, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And then you're not. And then you shoot 10 people plus Vanessa Williams, like, oh, this is good. And then you're not. And then you shoot 25 people. And it's on and on. So problems are going to continue to arise. What you cannot do is succumb to them. Yeah. And if you do, you know, cry for a night or you know, but don't quit. Nike had it right when they said, just do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I love quotes. One of my other favorite quotes is, if you quit, you're guaranteed to fail.
Mm.
And that's just not who I've ever been in my life, so.
Yeah, yeah. Did anything, because I think, one thing about like a book or any type of project is that you can't fit in everything, oof. Even if you want to, right?
Yes.
Did anything you really love or, you know, in journalism, we always, this is really horrible how, I don't know why they made up this term, but we call it kill your darlings. Yeah, that's so grim. But it's like, you know, the things, like you're writing something and your editor's like, you got to cut that. It doesn't sound, it's not good. And you're like, but I love it, right? It sounds great. Doesn't everybody love it? And it's like, no, we don't. So did you have some stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor? Because it just, maybe it didn't fit or it threw off the balance of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was only one person who I will not name that didn't make the book because when I photographed her, she was in a different space and a different time.
Uh-huh.
Actually, two. I made an agreement to photograph Sinbad. Uh-huh. But then I also made an agreement that because of some issues he had, if it wasn't gonna work, it wasn't gonna work. And now I was fine with that. So, but everything else, you know, the publisher was really good about helping me bring my vision to life.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing, other than those two things, nothing ended up not being in the book that I didn't wanna be. And now, there's a lot of outtakes.
Okay.
And there's so many, we could have another book
another
up here.
Book.
But no, as far as the book itself, it's definitely what we wanted it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like you imagined it, you dreamed it, and like it's here how you wanted it to be.
Yeah, if somebody woke me up in 2 minutes, that would make more sense. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it's like, it's exactly perfect. It's mm-hmm. exactly perfect. A week and a half ago, we just had a party in LA, and I, you know, I remember being on my bike riding up La Brea, like, oh God, I can't wait for this party. And that was like 2013. Mm-hmm. I was like, this party is going to be so great. I got to make this book good so the party is great. I literally had that thought. And we just had a party last week, which was absolutely bonkers. And just the support and the love and the people that came out, it was phenomenal, which says to me that I was on the right track.
Yeah. So what's next?
Sleep. So the next book that I have in mind will not take 10 years because at least 12, 13 people from here is like, I want to come back and do something else.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to formulate that. And hopefully by the end of this month, I'll have one or two shots, which I'm very excited
about. Oh, wow.
About.
So you're like really going right into it. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, I'm going to take some time.
Yeah, but see, I have. Like this part just came like, you know, a thief in the night. That's a Bible reference. This part just came like a thief in the night. So, you know, this part, I just love. Yeah. I love when teaching new people about the book. I love presenting it to people. And I'll always be here for that. As far as creating, it's just, you know, it's been a while since I think I shot Blair Underwood last. And so it's time.
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
And I will rest, I promise.
Do you have any people that are like on your dream list to work with, whether it is in this capacity or because you're like, I mean, you're in LA, it's like you're with all these people, you're working with them in different ways. I don't know if I could like even be near people and not like just grab them. Like,
you could. Do I have a dream list? I wouldn't say a dream list because everybody has something to bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I ran into a whole A-list thing. And I'm like, you know, if I had everybody on the Black A-list in this book, I'd probably have 11 people that we can name right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, what do? You're back to, you know, the magnificent people I have. So the only person on my dream list that I can think of right now is who? Janet Jackson. So everybody else, I can, I can figure out. So I'll get her because my friend does her hair and makeup now. So we'll see.
You're like this.
I'm like, give this to Janet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And one thing too, when I picked up the book, you know, which is really interesting that you kind of like, you know, you're doing this in collaboration with Ebony is because I think especially because we're here in Chicago, we've been talking so much about the Ebony Archives and it's such a big part of, you know, Black history and American history and our history here, everybody's history really, right? Yeah. How do you want your book to kind of go down in history, right? Mm. Like how we go back and we look at the Ebony Archives and we're looking at stuff and we're kind of like taking in the beauty and the glamour and the love. How do you want like your work?
Yeah, I want it to go places that I'm not even thinking about right now. I want it to be in the Museum of African American History in DC. I think it should be. I also want it to be in white households and Asian households and Hispanic households. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody said to me, oh, you should do a, you know, this is cultural too, right? Somebody goes, you should do a Hispanic or Asian. I said, but those aren't my cultures, you know, and I wouldn't want to attempt to do something not understanding a culture and do something wrong or, you know, but, you know, I will be, you know, I'm here to answer questions to those photographers that want to bring that to their communities because I think imagery matters, you know, and just to be in a space where you could put your name on something and, you know, I can't wait to give it to Barack Obama. That's where I want it to go.
Yeah. I mean, of course, in 2 years, we're going to be doing this at the museum in DC anyways, at the African American History Museum. So it's totally fine.
Yeah.
We'll just pick this up on the second anniversary of the book.
Perfect. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Karel.
Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, authors Reina Grande and Juan Martinez discuss their work and approach to writing. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.